The information and opinions presented in this ARC Energy Ideas podcast are provided for informational purposes only and are subject to the disclaimer link in the show notes.
This is the ARC Energy Ideas podcast with Peter Terzakian and Jackie Forrest, exploring trends that influence the energy business.
Welcome to the ARC Energy Ideas podcast. I'm Jackie Forrest.
And I'm Peter Terzakian. Welcome back.
So, Peter, I saw your article in the Avenue magazine.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah. Everyone in Calgary, you can pick up a hard copy. I'm not sure where they are these days since I don't go out much, but it is online, too. That's where I read it.
It is, yes. I never like looking at myself in photographs.
Well, there's some pretty cool photos there. You gave an update on Energy File, and you talked about what you guys are doing with Heritage Park, which I don't think our listeners have heard about.
Yeah, it's really coming along. So Heritage Park is going to be opening up what's called Innovation Crossing. It's a whole new building celebrating natural resource development and restoring things like the coal mine and the drilling rig. And there's a whole new building that is super energy efficient that overlooks the Glenmore Reservoir. And inside that building is going to be kiosks and displays that are going to host content that we're helping to develop and using the same software platform that energyfile.org uses. So super excited.
Okay, so check it out. And boy, whole building got built at Heritage Park over COVID because it just popped out of nowhere. But that'll be exciting to see a new building there. It also had a bit about your career history in the article. And I was really sweating bullets. It talked about your retirement, but then it said, it's not in the cards yet. And I'm like, phew. We can keep doing the podcast. So that was good news for me and for all of our listeners too.
No plans to retire, although that makes me sweat bullets occasionally, but it's always a pleasure to do these podcasts. So I think we'll be doing them for a long time.
All right. Well, today we have a special guest, Nicholas Gull, Director, Distributed Energy Resources at the Canadian Renewable Energy Association. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome, Nick.
Thanks so much. Great to be here. I'm a huge fan of the podcast.
Yeah, great. Well, maybe start out by talking about, by way of introduction, who you are, what you do, a bit about the Canadian Renewable Association, your role, so on.
Sure. So I'm the director for Distributed Energy Resources, which encompasses any generation that's connected to distribution lines. So the lines that flow into our buildings and homes. So primarily that's rooftop solar in Canada, but it also encompasses a lot of battery storage and in Alberta, particularly a lot of larger scale wind and solar generation as well. So huge range of really interesting energy innovation happening at that level. Our association, the Canadian Renewable Energy Association, is a national trade association. We're based in Ottawa, but active in every province and territory, including particularly Alberta right now. We have around 300 members across the country in wind, solar, and battery storage. So we provide advocacy and developing best practices and a whole range of different services to our members.
Great. Well, we have the right person for the conversation today because we want to talk about the state of solar in Canada and also the tsunami of announcements here in Alberta, where those are coming from. But we also, on the second part of this, want to talk about residential solar, specifically to help us with Peter's decision to install home solar. Mm. So we're really excited to get your opinion on that decision.
Yeah, congratulations, Peter. I'm very pleased to hear you've joined the winning team on solar. That's excellent.
Yeah, no, it's really very interesting to go through it at a personal level to understand the economics and the process and all that's involved. And I must say, I think it's going to work out really well. We can talk about that later, as we said.
Sounds like you've already decided.
I have decided. I put down the deposit.
Oh, I bet you were waiting for our conversation.
No suspense, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's all right. We'll convince you anyway. All right, so let's start with the state of solar in Canada. First of all, I want to reference the report you do annually with the IEA and NRCan around Canadian renewables situation. I'm going to put a link to that study, but we're just looking for the short version of it. And it has all sorts of data if anyone really wants to understand solar in Canada, so I recommend it. But at a high level, what's the growth rate of solar in Canada? And how big is utility scale versus residential in Canada today?
So for the past decade or so, Canadian solar has been growing at a rate of around 300 megawatts a year, much, much slower than that in recent years and much faster than that around sort of 2015-16. About 90% of the solar in Canada is installed in Ontario, and almost all of it was driven by the feed-in tariff program that Ontario had from 2009 to 2017, I believe. And this was a very generous incentive program for customers to install solar on their homes, but also for larger utility scale projects. And that drove tremendous growth in the sector at a time when solar was very expensive. So that program, as I said, ended in 2017. 2018, I think we reached probably the lowest ebb of solar capacity growth in Canada, with fewer than, I think, 200 megawatts installed. For this past year, I guess with COVID, a lot of people were expecting that growth would really drop down. We didn't see that at all. In fact, I think growth actually picked up versus 2018 and 19. And for this coming year, we're expecting the installation of around a gigawatt of new solar capacity across Canada.
Wow, so almost three times the historical average.
Exactly. Frankly, unprecedented growth. And that's all subsidy-free as well, which is, I think, quite notable.
So, Camille, let's just put that into perspective for our audience. So a gigawatt, a typical gas-fired power plant that you would see is about 300 megawatts, give or take. So this is like the equivalent of three reasonable-sized gas-fired power plants, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Obviously, it won't produce at the same capacity factor as a gas power plant. In Calgary, I think typical solar capacity factor would be around 15%.
So that means it's running 15% of its total expected output?
That's correct. So out of the 8,760 hours a year, it's cranking out its maximum generation for 15% of those hours. But the good news is that those hours typically fall during the daytime when people are awake and using electricity. So it's a good match with when demand for electricity is highest, particularly in Ontario, where demand is very heavily driven by air conditioning during the summer.
And the summer is obviously the longer daylight hours, so it fits in nicely.
How much of that growth is from residential? Is it a really small amount today? Is that mostly utility scale?
Oh, great question. So around 70% of Canada's total solar capacity is large-scale solar farms, so solar panels installed in a big field. And around 30% is rooftop solar, so on homes and factories and retail stores.
Actually, that's bigger than I thought for the residential side.
Do you think it should be reversed? I mean, you know, there's a lot of rooftops that are empty.
There are.
And using arable land for solar, I mean, I know that's sort of where it started. It's got the scale and so on. But going forward, and I guess this is what these incentives are for, it should be on people's roofs where you have individual micro utilities, basically, right?
Absolutely. Canada is, frankly, far behind our peer countries in installing rooftop solar. I mean, we have, I would guess, around 50,000 solar homes in Canada. The UK, which is obviously nowhere near as sunny, has 20 times that number. Obviously, they have more people as well, but there's certainly no reason why we couldn't have vastly more rooftop solar in this country.
Can we explore that? I mean, what is it? Is it the snow? Is it the lack of incentive? Is it like, what is it? What's the barrier to people doing it?
I think, honestly, the biggest obstacle is probably the cost of the technology and the challenges with the payback period for a lot of homeowners. And historically, that's obviously been more of an issue than it is today. So the cost of rooftop solar has come down about 90% over the past decade. Mm-hmm. So it's really getting to the point now where you're seeing sort of less than 10-year payback periods. And that's, again, like 100% subsidy-free, which is great. So there are some incentive programs, and we're going to talk about that, I guess, later on maybe. But I think historically, it just hasn't really made sense for household budgets. But now I think that's rapidly changing.
Yeah, well, let's get to that when we do the economics in the second part. But let's talk a bit about the utility scale. We are seeing just this huge wave of investment here in Alberta. And I'll just list off these projects. Traverse Solar, we actually had the CEO of Greengate on our podcast, Dan Balaban. They're installing 465 megawatts, which is the biggest in Canada.
Yeah.
And then there's others, like Greengate is also putting in a smaller Lathome solar. Capital Power announced one as well. Oh, by the way, the Greengate One Lathom is being backed by Amazon. Capital Power's new project is being backed by Labatt's Brewery. Blue Earth put forward their Hand Hills project, which is being backed by Shell. And TransAlta just recently announced 130 megawatts project being backed by Pembina Pipeline. So instead of being backed by the Alberta government as they were in the past, we've just got a whole bunch of capacity here being backed by corporates.
Absolutely. It's really remarkable, the growth of the power purchase agreement market in Alberta. And that's really down to the fact that Alberta is the only jurisdiction in Canada where this kind of bilateral contracting between a corporate offtaker like Labatt Breweries or Amazon and a renewable energy developer, be it wind or solar, where that's possible. So Alberta is, frankly, like absorbing all of the pent-up demand for corporate PPAs in Canada because it's just not possible in other provinces.
So yeah, just to expand on that, what's going on is that, say, Amazon wants to drive towards net zero by adding more solar into their overall mix. Geographically, it doesn't really matter where it is because they can net it out against some emissions somewhere else that they're generating down in the United States or wherever. So they say, oh, Alberta, deregulated market, I could set up a solar farm there. And away they go.
That's exactly right. I'm sure it's slightly more complicated than that from like a contracting standpoint, but that's really the gist of it.
And part two of that is that they are not allowed to do that in other provinces because those provinces are regulated with provincially owned utilities, whereas here we're deregulated free market.
Yeah, so Alberta's fair, efficient, and openly competitive electricity market is really the only jurisdiction where this is possible. Nova Scotia is quite notably making moves toward this right now. They're doing that in partnership with Nova Scotia Power, which is the crown utility there. It's a slightly different arrangement, but definitely I think a lot of jurisdictions around the world, frankly, are starting to see the economic development potential associated with large corporations and their demand for clean energy. And that's definitely a trend that we expect to pick up steam here in Canada as well.
Well, you got to think maybe some provinces are going to say, hey, there's a huge economic opportunity here to get projects and get people to work. So maybe other provinces in Alberta will follow Alberta's lead here. But let's talk about Alberta. There's just so many projects now, and I expect the trend to net zero is not getting any smaller. And more corporates are going to want to have more renewables so that they can meet their targets. So what is this going to do to power prices in Alberta? And I know you're familiar with it, but maybe I'll explain to our listeners. We've got the California duck curve situation. So in California, they have a lot of solar. And what happens is when all that solar comes on from noon to 5 p.m., the prices get deeply discounted because there's like too much power. But as soon as the sun sets, the price spikes up because now all that capacity isn't available. Are we going to get the duck curve and overall lower prices in Alberta because of all this capacity coming on?
It's a really interesting question. So we've been obviously talking a lot about how much growth there is in wind and solar in Alberta thanks to these corporate PPAs. But I think it's really important to sort of contextualize that with the fact that we're starting from a very low base. So right now, I would say the absolute maximum, which is actually probably close to right now in terms of June, the most that solar would be contributing to meeting the midday summer peak in Alberta would be around 2% of total electricity. So given the pipeline, for lack of a better word, of new solar that we're expecting to come online, that number could grow closer to 10% of peak summer electricity demand being met by solar within the next couple of years. So let's say by the end of 2023, potentially. And definitely like at, you know, 10% of peak demand, I think you would probably start to see some market dynamics resulting from that zero cost generation coming on. The other sort of countervailing factor is the rise of battery storage. And this is another, I think, pretty notable Alberta success story with particularly thinking of TransAlta and their wind charger project, which paired very large grid scale battery storage with a wind farm, essentially making the wind farm to some extent dispatchable. I mean, that trend is frankly unstoppable. Like all our members who are developing like renewable projects at any scale, from residential all the way up to large wind or solar farms, they're choosing to co-locate battery storage with those projects. So that is going to, I think, help to mitigate against some of those sort of duck curve impacts. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that will be totally the case by 2023, but certainly going forward, I wouldn't expect that massive price swing to be mm-hmm. quite as stark as it has been in California. The other thing to point out, I mean, also California has like just vastly more solar than Canada combined. So I think on a sunny day in the summer in California, solar would be meeting around half of the state's electricity demand. We're nowhere near that in Alberta, unfortunately.
So can I read into your language, what would you say, new market dynamics? We have the potential for lower pricing here in Alberta. I mean, it's already pretty darn low relative to a lot of jurisdictions. So obviously adding more capacity would tend to push the prices down even more.
Absolutely. I think probably the biggest uncertainty there is what's going to happen with the pass-through of the federal carbon price to electricity generation. Hmm. That's live. Like, that's being determined as we speak. So that's going to be the biggest variable there. But certainly that would have some impact for sure in terms of driving up the cost of gas. I mean, we are already hearing, like, I think almost all coal will be eliminated from the Alberta system years ahead of anyone's expectations. I think by 2023, maybe it'll be entirely gone. So that gas price with a carbon price attached to it, that's going to be the market maker, essentially.
So what you're saying, Nick, is there's just so many variables going on in Alberta. Like, we're losing a bunch of capacity due to the coal shutdowns.
Yes.
We're also adding some natural gas, although it's uncertain exactly how much natural gas we'll get. We're going to get this
correct.
Solar. And then there's the potential for the actual tax burden on some of these assets to change. So there's just so many variables. It's hard to say if solar is, you know, just one of many things that are changing in Alberta.
But I mean, there's the influx, very large influx of these corporates coming in corporate pursuit of net zero globally. And they look at Alberta and say, hey, deregulated place, I can put in a solar farm. I mean, we're talking about pretty big numbers. I mean, cumulatively, even what's been announced recently is for almost a gigawatt, which is the size of a reasonable nuclear power plant. I mean, that's huge, right?
Mm-hmm. So, especially for a province that only has, 10 gigawatt of demand on average.
Yeah, right? No, I know, as Nick mentioned earlier, the capacity factor and so on. But I mean, it's a lot of capacity that will go a long way to offsetting the loss of the coal, and then you bring in the energy storage. So I think when you net it out over the course of a decade, it's looking pretty good.
That we'll have a lot of generation, potentially. Yeah, and I do think that this might just be the start of the wave. Why wouldn't we see more corporates come here to Alberta?
I think we will. But let's talk about some of the factors that may counterbalance this. And one of them we've talked about on this podcast over the past few weeks is inflation and commodity price inflation. You know, to put up a solar farm requires steel and silicon and also copper and et cetera, et cetera. So what are you hearing within the renewable installation community, the power developers, et cetera, about inflation?
It's definitely a concern. The commodity prices affect solar in a number of different ways. So you're absolutely right to identify steel. It's the racking equipment, whether you're putting it in the ground or to affix solar panels to a rooftop, you're using a lot of steel, a lot of aluminum, which is also very expensive now for the frames of the actual solar panels. Solar panels also contain a bit of silver. The price of silver has doubled over the past year. Mm. And then you've got a lot of copper wiring as well. And then on top of it all, like, the freight costs have also gone up pretty significantly. So that sort of commodity cycle, I think that's going to work itself out over time, as these things usually do. But in the meantime, definitely this is a bit of an anomalous year in terms of the sort of remarkably steady 7% year-on-year cost decreases that you see for solar going back the past 50 years.
That's starting to level out, right? I mean, you're not going to see that forever.
Probably that's true. Nothing lasts forever. But on the other hand, I mean, the end of cheap solar has been predicted many times before. Mm-hmm. I think one notable example is with Solyndra, the U.S. cylindrical solar panel company based in California. Around the time of the financial crisis, they received a couple billion dollars or something in bailout money from the Obama administration to develop these very high-tech solar panels that didn't need racking systems. But that was all dependent on an extremely inflated silicon price. And lo and behold, the silicon price went down 80% or something in 2010, and the company went bankrupt. So these dynamics come and go. And I think the solar industry has been remarkably adept at responding to input cost changes. So, for example, the amount of silver in a solar panel has gone down by 80% over the past 5 years. The amount of electricity it takes to make a watt of polysilicon is about half of what it was 15 years ago. So, long story short, I mean, yes, we won't see 7% year-on-year cost decreases forever, but I wouldn't count out the industry's ability to adapt and respond to these changes.
All right, let's move on to the residential solar. Before we get into Peter's proposal here, let's talk about the federal budget. Did it include any incentives for residential solar?
It did indeed. Very, very exciting news for folks who are looking to go solar. We've got $5,000 Greener Homes grant that's available now for retrofits for homes across Canada. And that will be a grant of $1,000 per kilowatt up to a maximum of $5,000. And $1,000 for a battery storage system as well, if you want to pair that with your solar PV system.
Look at that. Well, we're going to have to factor that into the economics. We didn't do that yet, Peter, because that was announced before you got your economics. And then I think there's also coming still the interest-free loan that the government's offering, right?
Yeah, we still don't have full details on that, but we're expecting them to come out later this summer. And that will be a zero interest loan of $40,000 to be provided by the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation.
So one of the barriers is the upfront cash. So that's no longer a barrier. Plus, you're going to get some discount on the overall cost. Peter, why don't you describe what you're looking at for your home then?
Yeah, so I decided to go through the exercise of installing solar panels. I was put in touch with a solar panel installer called Virtuoso. And they helped me through the process. I looked at the numbers, of course, because that's what I do for a living, and realized, wow, this, even without any incentives, seems to make quite a bit of sense. And you know, what's really quite stunning is what happens in the summer months, as I said, because when you can sell back into the grid at higher prices, it actually substantially reduces the payback time here in Alberta. Anyway, I don't know what it's like in other jurisdictions, but you know, you can get a decent return on a payback. I thought it was going to be around 10 years, but it's potentially half that.
Yeah, 5 years. But here's the interesting thing. I had to look at your proposal too. Mm-hmm. You're going to sell your electricity in the summer at 25 cents a kilowatt, and you are producing like 2 times more power than you need in the summer. Mm. You know, in the winter, you're only going to be able to sell for like 7 cents, but you actually only produce like a half or a quarter of what you need. But what happens if all that solar comes on from all those Googles and Amazons and it kills our summer price? Then your payback's not going to be 5 years.
We just heard from Nick. It's not going to happen.
That's right. We'll show Nick this podcast in 5 years.
I need a disclaimer or something.
I'll be paid out before that happens. I think it's the way to go. I think there's a real value proposition that did not exist even a few years ago, because as Nick described, the cost of solar panels has come crashing down, and the installation is now established in terms of the knowledge base that's required to go in and make an assessment of, you know, look at your utility room, see what you need, what it's going to cost, detailed proposal, and put my deposit down. There's some permitting to be done, and once done, I think in a couple weeks, it's going to be installation time.
Well, and here's the other thing. The total capital cost was in the range of, it was over 20,000, right? But I think sometimes they're typically around 20,000 to 25,000. So that's a lot of upfront capital. But if you're going to take five off that, you know, that payback might only be 3 years.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm doing, my system's about 10 kilowatts.
Right. So that's a big system.
It's a fairly decent size. So in the summertime, it's like a little micro utility.
Yeah, well, you'll be selling as much as you're consuming, right? And you'll be running that air conditioner guilt-free, because there'll be no emissions associated with it. And then, you know, the other thing is, the barrier is people don't necessarily have that kind of money up front.
No.
But this interest-free loan, to me, I think is pretty interesting. Now, it's still a loan. You still have payments on it. But your savings, you know, the money you're making off the electricity might offset that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, especially if you think about escalation of carbon tax and if your power generation is coming from a jurisdiction where it's a high carbon intensity. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. So what do you think, Nick? Do you think that...
I couldn't have put it better myself. I think that's exactly right.
Well, and I think it would surprise a lot of people because I think the perception is that it just doesn't make any economic sense.
That's the perception. But as I investigated it, I think the time is right, and even more right, as I said, with these incentives that are coming out. And my only question is, and maybe come to you, Nick, is where are we at with developers of new homes installing solar panels just as a matter of course?
I think it's emerging. I mean, I'm aware of J-Man Home, based in, in beautiful Calgary, Alberta. Mm-hmm. I think they offer solar on all their new builds. And I imagine there are a number of other home building companies out there across the country doing the same. Definitely, I think consumers are starting to demand it. There's a lot of interest in net zero homes. So these are homes that produce as much energy as they consume. So obviously 99% of that would be with solar power. And I think there's a growing recognition on the part of home builders that far from being cost prohibitive, this is actually potentially a good way to earn more profit from homes that are lower operating costs for the homeowner and therefore more desirable.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you factor in a pre-installed solar system on a new home and that the electrical utility costs to the homeowner, depending upon the configuration of air conditioning and size of home, et cetera, you could slash a few hundred bucks off your average utility bill. That's pretty significant in terms of even like a fraction of your mortgage payment.
Well, and especially if you don't have to put the upfront money up to pay for that benefit. Now, do you think it's going to increase the value of your home, Peter? Like when you go to sell it, is someone going to pay you $20,000 more for your home, do you think, because you have the solar panels?
Well, maybe over the long run when the whole housing market cools down. I mean, right now, there's just upward pressure on home prices with really no attribution to the system. Is just like a shack goes for, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, it seems. But I think in the future, there's no question as the carbon tax escalates in jurisdictions where that's a big factor, yeah.
So Nick, I have a question. Are there any resiliency benefits for getting solar? You know, if there's a power outage, as we saw in Texas earlier this year, would your solar provide you any benefit when the sun is shining? And then the second question is, if you went out and got the Tesla Powerwall, or something like that, would that provide you greater resiliency?
Great question. So if you just have solar, no, that won't help you in the event of a blackout. A solar PV system generates DC, direct current electricity, and you need an inverter to convert that into alternating current, which is the type of current we use for almost all of our appliances. So that inverter is drawing a tiny bit of power from the electricity grid and synchronizing the power from the solar panels so it matches up with the grid electricity. And as soon as the grid goes down, so does your solar system. However, if you have a battery, like a Tesla Powerwall, and the power from your solar panels is going into the battery, you could be self-sufficient for probably, I don't know, a day or something in the event of a blackout.
So, Peter, are you thinking of getting that Powerwall then?
There you go.
Yeah, I am getting the Powerwall. Definitely.
And I'll come to your place next power outage.
For sure.
I'll be there.
I'll brew you a coffee.
And you'll get $1,000 off with the new with the new government program too. So
bonus. I can buy the coffee.
All right, Nick. Well, this has been a great conversation. We've learned a lot about solar in Canada, and it's really exciting actually to see this residential solar opportunity. I might have to go look at this myself now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Great to speak with you.
Yeah.
And thanks to our listeners for joining the podcast. If you like this podcast, please rate us on the app that you listen to and tell someone else about us.
For more ideas and insights, visit arcenergyinstitute.com.